everything that is in the pathway of the student's enrollment journey should be under the purview of One Vision. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to have all of those individuals report to the same person, but there should be one entity, one person that is giving a vision for how all of those different pieces are overseeing those pieces, are working together and report up into a unified vision for how you're going to get all of those different internal stakeholders to march in the same direction towards unified set of goals.
Hey, welcome to the Higher Ed Storytelling University podcast on the EdUp Experience Podcast Network. This is a show dedicated to helping higher ed marketers tell better stories, create better content, and enroll more students. My name's John Azzoni. I'm the founder at Unveiled, and we're a video production company working specifically with college marketing teams to make it easy for them to scale up and even automate their student and alumni success stories through our subscription approach. And you can learn more about that at unveiled.tv, and that's unveiled.tv. If you're listening to this podcast for the first time, go ahead and subscribe. We'd love to have you. And if you're wanting your college and university's content to resonate on a deeper emotional level with prospective students, with alumni, with parents, whatever, I want you to subscribe to my free newsletter. Every week I send out tips and insights on creating more emotionally resonant content, including examples and best practices from other institutions, articles and blog posts, that week's podcast episode, and much more. So head over to unveiled.tv/newsletter and sign up. All right, let's get on with the show. My guest today is Joshua Charles. Joshua is a senior marketing and communications leader in higher education. He's also a volunteer and board member for High Ed Web, a professional development network supporting digital professionals who work in higher education. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about Joshua's work at Rutgers Business School and how all the facets of his role kind of come together to fill classrooms with students at Rutgers. So Joshua, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Do you go by Josh or Joshua?
Either is fine. Josh is good for today.
Okay, Josh. Got it. That's always my inclination. I used to work with a Joshua that like insisted on being called Joshua. So it was like very... I always just wanted to just say Josh. cool. Well, let's kick things off here with a little icebreaker. What's something that people might be surprised to know about you, Josh?
I think, outside of higher ed, I'm a big hockey fan. So us being based in northern New Jersey, my, of course, favorite team is the New Jersey Devils. And something that they might be surprised to know about me professional-wise, my original background was actually in game design and programming. And that eventually stumbled through to website development, which is actually how I got into marketing.
What were some games that you designed?
So this was back during college. So we never got into the industry itself. And it was actually, it was precisely because I was thinking about, do I really want to be confined to certain areas of the country? Because that's where the development studios were. And just they do great work, but it's just a very volatile industry. Not to say that higher ed doesn't have its ups and downs, but that just wasn't the life for me, and I wanted to be able to have something stable for my family. So we never got that far. We did create a bunch of fun, really simple games and like C++ and C# and those sort of programming languages way back then. So nothing that anyone would know, but it's still fun for us.
Yeah, that's really cool. I really respect people that can code and do, you know, that kind of development stuff. I always just think like that would be really hard with all the variables of a video game to like, I have no concept of how that works, but I respect you for knowing how it works. So I pulled this off of your LinkedIn profile. So maybe it's outdated. We'll find out in real time here. But your role at Rutgers, strategic planning, team leadership and development, enrollment, marketing, communications strategy, marketing technology, analytics and reporting, relationship building, organizational leadership, and budget management. Is that correct?
Yes.
Awesome. So just a couple things that you do, not very part-time. So I guess in this episode, we're kind of be talking, you know, touching on most, if not all of those, to kind of just get a sense for how Rutgers is, leading a cohesive marketing strategy. But tell me about, because I know you have a team of like 10 people. Tell me about the layout of your team.
Sure. So there's two ways to kind of look at this, a part one and a part two. The first part is that we have a web strategy team that is inside of the communications and marketing office, and it is intentionally separate from IT. And we made that change 10 plus years ago. I know sometimes in some institutions, their web people are part of IT, and IT is separate from communications and marketing. But a website is a communications and a marketing platform first and foremost, and not a technology platform. That's secondary. So that's why we're situated the way that we are. And for our communication and the marketing team, there are essentially three divisions. I've seen all sorts of variations of this in other schools, but for us, it is our web strategy group, which is the team that I lead, our communications group, who oversees social media and articles and media coverage. And then there is sort of like a dedicated paid advertising group. And collectively, we all are in service of enrollment marketing goals and brand advancement, in addition to how we can continue to tell stories about current students as well, and of course, promote faculty and research and things like that. But that's essentially the three pillars of the team. And there are 11 positions, but there's one vacancy. So there are 10 people at present.
Cool. I like that you combined the web, just took it out of IT, put it in it with the marketing folks. I was talking to somebody, was having a discovery call with a potential client, a corporate client. And they were like, well, we want to do more video content. And then just going on their website, it was very outdated. And, you know, we really had this whole conversation of like, well, it really starts with your website. You know, like you can do all this video content over here, but if you're driving them to a website that's not telling the story that you want it to tell, or doesn't have the right copy on it, or just is outdated, it's clunky, that is really going to be working against you in a content marketing strategy. So I like that. Is that, is that kind of along the lines of your thinking as well?
Precisely. Everything that is in the pathway of the student's enrollment journey should be under the purview of one vision. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to have all of those individuals report to the same person, although that is certainly helpful. But there should be one entity, one person that is giving a vision for how all of those different pieces, and then the folks that are overseeing those pieces are working together and report up into a unified vision for how you're going to get all of those different internal stakeholders to march in the same direction towards unified set of goals.
Very cool. I love that. So you've been doing some work around like how you define and unite each area of the team into kind of a streamlined MarCom workflow. So what's that process looked like? Have you faced any challenges with that? Tell me about that.
Sure. And for context, one of the things that we're doing actively right now, which we just had a team meeting about yesterday, is just going through that process and developing it so that we're all on the same page. So I start with two goals. One, I would love to see a shared understanding from everyone on the team about what everyone's role is, what those responsibilities entail, and so that everyone on the team understands what everyone else's role is as well, so that we all have the same understanding about how we can move forward to accomplish enrollment specific goals. And then of course, the second goal being, if the first was a shared understanding, the second goal is some sort of living document or guide that whose purpose is to inform going forward, not just who we are today, but our future selves. And we need to refer back to, oh, that's right, this person is responsible for this particular task. We should always be thinking about how we carry knowledge forward. And we're not all going to be here a year, 2 years, 3 years from now. We want to be able to have documentation that is kept up to date, that informs our present selves, our future selves, and our future team members that aren't here yet, to be able to have this understanding about where we've been and where we're trying to go. So those are the two outcomes that I sort of say, like, that's what we want to achieve. And then we have the conversation as a team about if the big organizational goal is how do we advance enrollments, then if you kind of picture this as a sort of large spreadsheet, and on the top left side, you're going to have your highest level goals. And on the far right side, you're going to have the granular level work that goes into all of the things that lead up to that point. So starting from the left is we're trying to support specific organizational goals, and that's enrollment. From there, the vehicle that we use to do that is that integrated communications and marketing strategy or plan. From there, there are specific categories that make up the integrated communications and marketing strategy, which is there's going to be advertising, there's going to be social media, there's going to be content creation, there's going to be website management, all of those sort of big buckets that define the functional areas that make up what we define as integrated communications and marketing. Inside each of those categories are going to be like your day-to-day specific tactical things that you would sort of use as examples to define what, when we say advertising, it means this. When we say email marketing, it means this. Mm-hmm. It's all of the sort of steps that are involved. And for each of those individual tasks, who is responsible for doing that work? And then having a clear understanding from everyone on the team about who is responsible for that work. And in order to do that task, let's say creating digital ads for Google on search, who does this team member rely on internally on the team as well as externally? So if, for example, the advertising team member relies on our videographer to help develop video assets to use in digital ads via Google, then that's a good way to highlight that interaction. And then, of course, they collaborate with each other about how are we going to collaborate together so that we're on the same page about how I can accomplish my goal and how I can help you understand how we can work together in order to do these things. And then you also identify who are the external folks that you rely on. Is that students? If one of your tasks is to create news stories, for example, that talk about the student experience at Rutgers Business School, then obviously that involves some level of interviewing for students or the MBA staff, for example, or career management, to get them to talk about here are the benefits and here are the metrics that we have on file that let us know how we are doing placing or helping our students find jobs. So again, from the top, it's the organizational goal of enrollments that our integrated communications and marketing strategy feeds into. And then there are all of these sort of buckets or categories that make up the integrated communications and marketing strategy, like the email marketing, like advertisement, like website management, analytics. And then there are the granular level day-to-day tasks that go into those categories that help define who's responsible for what. And then we identify where that collaboration is within the rest of the team for each of those specific tasks, as well as where is that collaboration with all of our external stakeholders within the school and students. And then by defining those things, having conversations about them, having conversations specifically about how we collaborate together, that gives us the shared understanding of what is this entire experience like? How does it help students? How does it help us continue to get better and to learn how we can optimize different areas? Should there be certain tasks assigned to different people, for example? Where is there overlap? Where are there things that are happening that maybe we don't need to do anymore? All of that is part of the process. And what I'm doing now is just helping to define the goals and how we can structure conversations around how we advance those things and how we talk about them as individuals and as a larger team. And that's been a really valuable experience that we're continuing to have conversations on a weekly or monthly basis to advance.
That's awesome. And you seem like a leader that really understands that structure and clarity around roles influences morale and collaboration and all this stuff. And you might, you know, there's probably, you know, some creative roles, and just coming from a creative perspective, you know, the misconception about creatives is that we're just loosey goosey, like, whatever, bro, like, you know, just I'll figure it out that day when I come in, and I'll figure out who does what. I'm very much like, that stresses me out like a lot. And I, like some of my most, like, you know, I can think back in my career, you know, both in video production and in nonprofit, when I've had those moments of like, oh, finally, like some structure. And it was really after like roles were more clearly defined. Who's looking to me for what? What am I looking to you for? You know, and especially with video production. And I feel like there's, in my world, there's a lot of overlap in roles. If you look at like an internal production house, you might have a project manager, you might have an operations person, you might have an account exec, you might have a creative director, and all of those people might have some sort of touch point with the product or with the communications. And so it was always, you know, working at a previous production company, we were always trying to figure that out. Like, let's really define roles. And I remember just those times when we kind of figured that out and did the sort of quote unquote boring work of doing the paperwork and the, you know, the processes and procedures and stuff. It's like, that is actually very helpful, at least to me as a creative. And I know to everyone else, when you just know what you're expected to do every day. I mean, that's, I've read, you know, just about management and stuff, that's like a huge indicator of job success or job happiness, is like, do I know what's expected of me? And do I have the resources to, you know, to implement that?
Exactly.
Quick break here to tell you about how you can scale up your student and alumni success stories without taking on a bunch of extra work to manage with our video storytelling subscriptions. Look, making even one video takes a lot of legwork. There's lots of steps to go through to hire a video vendor, herd all the cats, and then you usually get one video out of that. But what if you could do a similar amount of work, but this time get a year's worth of storytelling content that you can use across the board to highlight your various programs, where pretty much all you had to do was find the stories and hand them off, and even that will help you with. Well, at Unveiled, our aim is to take the friction out of telling great stories. So whether you're a big school or a small liberal arts college, you can tell compelling stories all year round and fill your content calendar with video content. And we can get this done for you virtually anywhere in the world, certainly anywhere in the US. The way it works is we're going to batch shoot a year's worth of content, and then every month drip out to you one new student or alumni story, along with a whole package of additional video content. So you'll get the full length story, which is usually 2 to 3 minutes. You'll get a 30 second and a 15 second cut down of that story to use in various shorter contexts. And then you'll get 8 topical videos. And those topical videos are like, while we have this student sitting here on camera, let's ask them whatever we want. We'll work with your school to come up with a list of questions that touch on those things that you like to promote. So maybe it's scholarships or career development opportunities or on-campus housing or whatever it is. So that's the package of videos. You'll get that package every month, every single month. And not only can you take those polished videos that we deliver to you and crop them vertically and, you know, make great TikToks and Reels content, but you get to keep all the raw B-roll and interview footage that we shoot. Imagine the possibilities of 12 students or alumni following them around for half a day in classes, in labs, in whatever other visual contexts. And that's just an entire library of B-roll that you get to use forever and repurpose at no extra charge. It's all included in your subscription. So head over to unveiled.tv, that's UNVEILD.tv, and check out our work. You can find pricing information there as well. And if you'd like to chat further, you can book a call with me on the website there, and I'd be happy to talk about how we might be able to support you and also answer any questions you may have. Okay, back to the show. So let's see. And I keep getting distracted by all the, you have so many great books on your bookshelf back there, but one of them that kind of related to this question we were just talking about was The Burnout Epidemic. And you have that one facing forward to the camera. So I imagine that one's like your prime. So tell me about that book. I'm just curious.
So my bookshelf is very intentional. I certainly have not had a chance to read everything on here. And the very quick background on this is that It's a combination of books, but also toys and other trinkets that were given to me by people who are important in my life. So for the book specifically, I went through a master's program 2 years ago, graduated in 2022 for digital marketing. And throughout that process, I had bought all of these different books that I wanted to read, and I thought I would have time to read until I started taking my classes. And so they sat there, and I'm like, oh, I need to finish my classes. I just need to get to graduation. And then it became, well, this is now a present for my future self. When I graduate, I will finally be able to have the time to sit down and read the books that I intended to read. And that's what helped sort of create this shelf. So with Burnout specifically, which is one of the ones that I haven't had a chance to read yet, but the entire point of me reading articles online, but in addition to that, getting this book was to remind myself, but also to remind the team, like we can talk about ways to develop collaborative systems internally and with other stakeholders when it comes to how we tell stories to prospective students, as well as current students and alumni and other audiences. But we should do so while we are respecting the people who are telling those stories and making sure that our team has the resources, has the clarity, has the space to not feel like they have to be 100% on all the time. And this concept of leadership and how we should be approaching burnout and providing opportunities for people to feel as whole as they can be on whatever days that they feel like they can continue to do the awesome work that they do. Just want to remind myself and remind everyone else that at the end of the day, for as much great content that you see on websites and as much great storytelling that we see, there are still human beings behind the scenes who are doing a lot of that strategic and tactical work. And we need to be respectful of what it takes to go through the day-to-day that we do.
Absolutely. I love that. Just this thought, this question occurred to me as you were talking. What is your opinion, I mean, in relation to self-care and, you know, taking care of the team and stuff like that? What's your opinion on unlimited PTO?
Well, I think so. For clarity, for anyone who's curious, so for Rutgers, we don't have that system. You know, like folks earn a certain number of vacation days for how long they've either been in a role, or depending on the type of role that they're in, it kind of changes as well. So for some people, they have like 15 to 20 vacation days a year, and then you continue to earn sick days and things like that. Mm-hmm. For me personally, I am not someone. I'm not a 9-to-5 type of person. I'm not a you have to be in the office type of person or anything like that. I really don't care. As long as my responsibility is to provide structure and guidance and clearly defined goals and to help people feel like they have the resources and the support in order to reach those goals and help reduce barriers, open up ways to collaborate, reduce silos, and all of those things. How someone does their work is up to them. Yeah. When they do that work, it's up to them. Where they do that work, it's up for them. And then when they need to take time off, by all means, take as much time as they need. I, as a leader in our school, have to have systems in place in order to make sure that if somebody taking a day off or a week off or two should not materially impact the work that we're doing, because there should be systems in place in order to keep in general our momentum going. So I think if we were in a situation where there were unlimited days off and things like that, to me, I would just continue to fall back on what systems do we have in place in order to support people, in order to make sure that when they do need to take time off for any reason at all that I don't even need to know, that we have systems in place in order to continue to aspire and work towards our goals. And that's kind of how I approach that particular thing. But I just wanted to give context to like what Rutgers' current system is in relation to unlimited PTO.
Yeah, I mean, I think very few organizations have unlimited PTO. And I just thought, as we were talking about the burnout and stuff like that, it was just an interesting discussion about giving people too much freedom and how that is actually counterproductive to morale and things like that. Like, people, I think it's funny because, like, you know, we assume that people would prefer this open concept of loosey-goosey and you know, an open floor concept. Even I worked at but like I used to work at a nonprofit where we went to this open concept, and like, you could have a meeting anywhere. Like, you could just grab a lunch table and do your answer emails and have a meeting or whatever. And like, some people loved it and some people really hated it. There's like people that love the structure, and the structure and those walls kind of keep them happy and healthy in a job. And then there's other people that are like, feel too confined. I don't know. That was just a bonus question.
I would just very quickly add that I think, just like you said, structure is valuable to folks, and there are going to be some folks who don't like structure. I think it's trying to find a balance with the team that you have, while also just recognizing what the needs are for the organization, and then to keep in mind how to keep. If you're trying to set up situations where you want to encourage interaction between the team, which is obviously a big conversation once we went remote from COVID, then those still need to be optional settings. We can't force people into forced social gatherings. I know it's 2024 and the pandemic feels like it's kind of in the back burner at this point, but we still should be utilizing and learning from how to have intentional ways to structure and build collaboration amongst teammates, whether they are on campus, at home, or in some other location. I still think the lessons learned from how we lead teams from that era is still important now, in the context of if you didn't have guardrails, what would that look like? Or if you did have guardrails and intentional ways to be social and things like that, just being thoughtful about what that looks like and how it could work, I still think is valuable for us to continue having those conversations, even for institutions which may have strict official policies. It's still valuable conversations to have.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Love it. So I want to talk about some of your current like marketing technology, because I know that that's something that is instrumental sort of in your role. How do you and your team approach engaging with prospective students who have expressed interest in your programs? You know, what's that marketing tech stack look like? Tell me a little bit about that.
So kind of going back to the question that you asked earlier about, like, how do we develop a integrated communication, the marketing strategy, and like, what are all of the different pieces involved in doing that? Related to that is, well, we can talk about what a top to bottom integrated communication marketing strategy looks like. But there's also value in thinking about it in terms of student lifecycle, and then what technology you need to support all of those different states. More commonly, you can think about it in terms of that enrollment funnel, where top of the funnel, middle of the funnel, bottom of the funnel, and what activities do we need to support along that journey? And what technology is going to help us do those things from top to bottom? And for us, I do think it's valuable to think about it just very simply from the funnel. At the top level, we're talking about anything that can get folks to just have a general awareness of us, or at some point get to our website. And so, of course, we have to have cloud web hosting, because years ago we didn't. We had websites that were stored on internal servers, and that did not go well, particularly when the power went out. You can kind of imagine from there. So cloud web servers, open source.
I never thought about that. Like, if you had it on an internal server and the power goes out, I just always think that like websites just kind of exist in the air, you know?
it's one of those things where you hope you don't have to think about it in 2024. But that was our life like 10 years ago. So you definitely want to have like your, obviously every school and university is going to need a website. So all of the things that are involved with that, your actual CMS, to make sure that it's a system that, the students can easily navigate, but also the staff can easily manage on the back end. That's something that sometimes gets overlooked when we do website redesigns. So you need your web hosting, of course, as well. Then you need your measurement tools for the website. So that's going to be Google Analytics 4 nowadays. for better or worse, as well as any SEO tools that folks are using, like Google Search Console and things like that. As far as the and of course, in terms of getting folks to the website, there's going to be Google Ads and LinkedIn advertising and all of those things. At the middle of the funnel, I think is the where you get really interesting. You certainly need some sort of CRM. So in our case, we're using Salesforce, and that's going to be the system of record that says, here is who the prospect is. And with that, you need an engagement platform that connects to that CRM. So in our case, we're using Pardot, soon to be Salesforce Marketing Cloud. That's our marketing automation pathway. And those two things should be connected to an application portal because our team is primarily focused on graduate students versus undergrad. We have a application portal from EnrollmentRx, and EnrollmentRx plus Salesforce plus eventually Marketing Cloud. Those three things are the tech stack that makes up the application journey as well as the email marketing and SMS journey to go along with that. And that's where we really do a lot of the engagement. I realized that those sort of two-step process, you can try to increase the number of people who get to your website and then try to convert them, or you can also try to increase the conversions on the people that are already in your system or try to do both. So definitely getting folks to the website via the tools that we have for the website, as well as any of the advertising tools, digital advertising tools that we use there. And then once they do that, can we convert them so that they can move into Salesforce, Marketing Cloud, eventually our application portal. And a lot of that work happens there using those sort of tools. Occasionally, we obviously need to continue to experiment. AI, of course, is a big thing right now. Any other tools that are out there that might be beneficial to help us assess, help us implement something, help us brainstorm together. So of course we need project management tools and internal communication tools as well. We use Basecamp for a lot of that. All of those things are vital as part of the experience. And of course for graphic design, you need Adobe Creative Cloud or anything similar to that.
Or Canva, you know.
Yeah.
I saw someone, who is it? Shamel Forbes, who posts, he's like, I got a Canva, a Canva Pro account, so I'm a graphic designer now. So in a large organization like you guys have, how do you foster collaboration between different teams and different departments to ensure kind of like a cohesive student experience? Because I imagine there's a lot of management that has to happen outside of the four walls of your team.
And this is something that I would imagine any higher team or business school team maybe has a similar approach. I think the first thing is that you have to identify what outcomes you're looking for. And so for us, it's we want to be able to tell authentic stories about our students. And then when you break that down, an MBA student is different than a master's in digital marketing student, which is different than supply chain management student, which are different than undergrads. So list your priorities because you have to sort of focus on which programs are going to bring in the numbers that your organization is asking. So definitely need to start with priorities. But once you have a list of like, okay, these are the folks that we want to spend the most time in, and then these are other folks that we want to continue to be involved with. You just need to, for me, I think it's as simple as reaching out and say, I would like to get together and talk about how we can, as a communications and marketing team, help tell stories about the students in your program. And let's have a just sort of introductory meeting where you meet our team, we meet your team, and we talk about this is what we do, this is why we do it, and this is how we think we can help get more students to your program. I think we just have to be honest and talk about what is the big picture goal. What we're trying to do is beneficial to the organization as a whole, and it's beneficial to your program. You are the closest to your students. You know them better than anyone else. How can we interact with them, maybe interview some folks from different majors or different backgrounds? And these are the stories that we want to tell. This is kind of the timeline that we're thinking for this application cycle. And have some sort of regular cadence of communication with these groups where we get together and we talk about, again, those outcomes from the very beginning. We talk about our shared goals. We learn from them. What's most helpful for them as well? What would make it easier for us to collaborate with them? And you have those conversations up front. And then as you go through this process, as you know, whether that's going to be a meeting a semester or whatever the cadence happens to be, you come back and you say, this is what we set out to do in the beginning. This is what we've done. These are the stories that we've been able to share. Here's the analytics on them. Here's how we think they've been influential. And you just have conversations about the work that's going on and continue to talk about, here's what we feel like we've done well. Here's areas to continue working towards. But you have open and honest conversations about what you're trying to achieve, how they can get involved, the team that you're working with. And you continue to establish those relationships over time. You just have to be able to do that same thing for each individual audience that you're talking about. In our case, we have 2 undergraduate programs, not 1. And we have 18 graduate programs. So that's a whole lot of meetings. Yeah. And we have to be able to sort of figure out, like, what is that cadence going to be that's reasonable while still being able to tell the stories that's going to bring in students, that's going to help advance the school.
And so connected to that is like this content, the strategy, telling the student stories and stuff like that. So how do you guys think about content and aligning content strategy with each student journey? Like what role do each of those departments like have their own content teams or person, or is that all going through the central team, or how's that working to address those different student profiles?
So each of the different departments, you know, they're primarily focused on the student experience. And then you have your comms team, who's going to have most likely the expertise on like content strategy and things like that, which is the case for us. And again, I think it helps by defining what stories do we want to tell, and are those stories resonating with our audience? So some of that's going to be, need to look at the data from the existing content that we have, what's performing well, both the quantitative data as well as the qualitative data by asking students, just interviewing different students, you know, why did they apply? What information did they read along the way? What stood out to them? What do they like about the school? We need to be able to have those lines of communication with students so that we know what they are interested in and what might be helpful for the next round of students going forward. So we just have to talk about what those goals are when we interact with each of those different departments. This is what we're trying to achieve, and make that the focus. And then we can have those ongoing conversations with their staff, help us find students, have conversations with students, what's working, and then also set up those more objective assessment reports over time, where we're sending surveys to students about what information is helpful for them to make decisions about their education.
That's great. I like that you actually, you know, talk to the students directly, because I think there's too many assumptions made about, you know, what should the student journey look like, or what should, you know, what would in theory would be effective way of communicating towards them. But yeah, I mean, even just in my own personal, you know, journey as a business owner, having direct one-to-one conversations with people in my audience has been absolutely instrumental to everything that I do. It's just so, it's amazing when it's like, how could I have ever made decisions without that? You know? Okay. And then, so how do you approach understanding the needs and journeys of different student segments? So I obviously you mentioned talking to students, but do you guys, you mentioned survey data and stuff like that. Is there any other data that you're collecting that's informing those strategies?
So the first thing is the application itself and what questions might be on there. Certainly there's privileged information that needs to be separated from marketing, but there are other questions on there that are identified that are helpful to understand psychographic, demographic information about the student. But more specifically, sort of putting the application portal aside, I do think there's value and something that we're starting to do now. Those surveys, we have outlined particular questions that we feel could be valuable. And we're working through like, okay, well, if we had to try to elicit additional information about students that could help us with targeting, for example, in which different markets we want to go into, in addition to understanding that a digital marketing student is not the same for everyone. There, what we find is that there are actually three different segments within our digital marketing master's audience. Do we ask some questions on the form when they go to the website for the first time and they're just not finding out about us, in addition to first name, last name, email address, and what program they are most interested in? Are there additional questions that we could ask there? But just want to be mindful not to ask too many because you don't want to turn people off from sending the form. So some questions there. Once they get into that email journey, there are additional questions that you might be able to ask, a little bit more long form at that point. Maybe once they've submitted the application, you might want to follow up with them again at a different stage. And again, there's the application portal. And then even after that, once they are an admitted student, there might be additional questions that you might ask because their perspective might have changed since then. Same thing with current students. So just thinking about what is the typical journey like for a student from when they first find out about us to going to the website and coming into our marketing automation system to going through the application to being an admitted student to being a current student and then eventually to being an alum. Where can we strategically try to gauge who these students are, where they come from, information that would be helpful for us in the long run by asking questions at different points along that journey that are not, that make the most sense for that point along the way and are not intrusive to help us move forward. And we just have to figure out or sort of nail down which questions do we want to ask along each of the different paths there. But that's the conversations that we're having right now to get more insights.
Cool. That's helpful. So I know that, you know, we talked a minute ago about your MarTech stack, and I know it's challenging, especially when you're introducing new technology platforms and things like that, to kind of get everyone on board and manage those platform changes. Have you guys experienced maybe any like any rough roads in terms of incorporating and learning new platforms or anything, any barriers like that?
I'll give two quick examples. The first is that we recently tried to experiment with Semrush, very popular SEO tool. Mm-hmm. It's very good, but it's also a very involved tool. There's a lot of work that you need to do to set up a system in there that will produce meaningful insights over time. Realistically, we just didn't have the time. When you go through all of the priorities and the leftover time that was available, there just wasn't time left over to really put in the work to utilize the tool the way that we were going to want to use it. And to pay thousands of dollars for a tool that we're using 10% of, that just wasn't in the cards. So that was a quick one. And that helped us kind of, instead of focusing on Semrush and SEO to that extent without having a dedicated SEO person, we'd rather focus on discoverability as a whole. And then the second quick example is that this is more of a budgetary leadership challenge that I think folks would have. The transition from Pardot as a email marketing automation tool to Salesforce Marketing Cloud is going to be a big journey. We're going through it now. Yeah. There's all sorts of things in the works, but this is a very expensive process, well over six figures. And you know, once it gets to a certain dollar amount, like there has to be conversations and prepping with executive leadership ahead of time about this is where we're trying to go, this is why, this is what's involved, this is what's coming, this is how much it's going to cost, here's how we could potentially manage that transition financially at a time when budgets are being tightened. So I think we are ultimately going to get there. We're going to be able to switch to Marketing Cloud, but again, at a certain dollar amount, there's going to be like dean's level conversations ahead of time. And I think it's very valuable to start having that sort of laying the groundwork for that process or that budgetary item as early as possible and continue to tie it back to how it's going to help the school and solve challenges that they are focused on at the dean's level, which is ultimately getting new students. So that's it's a different issue than SEMrush, but it's still marketing technology related, and it's connected to things that I think any leader is going to have to navigate.
Yeah, I mentioned Salesforce. I feel like that's a really intimidating program to get into, especially when you consider that there are entire job roles just dedicated to being the Salesforce person, you know, and then when you think about, like, you know, you may or may not have that, or you may or may not have an SEO person, and then you're just trying to like cobble together some extra time to like figure out some keywords or something like that. Those are tough problems to navigate. Okay. And then lastly, I just want to talk about, cause I know organizational silos are, you know, just something that you talk about, from time to time. And it's a common challenge in higher ed. How do you personally go about like building those lines of communication and collaboration with, groups that interact directly, with students, and how do you break down those silos?
Yeah, and now this is something that I've sort of been in and around for quite a while. For me, it starts with being genuine about wanting to just get to know what people do. So I don't start a relationship by talking about what I need. I start a relationship by talking about, I want to get to know more about what you do, what your team does, and let's start there. And I just think it's very informative for myself, and I genuinely want to know because mm-hmm. I find it interesting. And I think once you're able to have casual conversation on that level, it makes it a whole lot easier to talk about, well, this is what our team does. This is what I'm doing. Here's how I think we can work together to do this thing. And it's going to have this impact on the school. And it's also going to help your team get more students. Or even if it's not about getting students, it might just be simply sharing marketing strategies. So for example, we have a executive education department, and they have their own marketing folks in that group. Our charge from the dean's office is to focus on degree programs, not non-degree programs. But I still find it valuable to have monthly meetings with the exec ed team where we share strategies, we talk about what's working marketing-wise, what's not working. They have their own Salesforce instance, they have their own Pardot instance, but being able to have conversations about marketing processes and tactics and sort of high level strategy and where the organization is going is a really valuable thing to have that started from just getting to know each other and to define like what we do, what they do, and come together on. It would be really great if we have regular conversations about the things that we're doing in case there are any synergies or things like that. And we've been having those meetings, monthly meetings, for 3.5 years now. So it's been going really well. Same thing with the IT department. That doesn't really have much to do with students at all, but it is to me, I still find it really valuable to have the IT partner be a very trusted partner with communication and marketing, given the work that they do. And then of course, it's equally as important to take the same approach again with all of the actually current student facing departments, whether that's career management, whether that's student services, whatever the case may be. Just start by getting to know folks. What do they like outside of work? How does their team work? And then once those conversations are going, it's so much easier to then be able to come up with some sort of agreement. It doesn't have to be intensive. It could be once a year. As long as you're able to show up and care and to take notice of what they do, I think people appreciate being seen. That is a very valuable thing to folks. And that has been a really easy gateway for me because I genuinely do care about what they do and getting to know who they are. And that makes it easier to have those conversations.
Yeah, definitely. I have really been investing in relationships on LinkedIn lately. And I find that like everyone is very, like when you make a new connection with someone, the guard is so thick up that you're going to sell them something. And I'm like, I just genuinely want to like connect. I don't want to just like LinkedIn know you. Like I would be great if we were like actually like, you know, friends or can help each other out. And then I've found that the ones that are receptive to that sense like the genuine desire to know what they do and instead of push what I do. Those have been some of the most rich relationships that have really snowballed into like really cool collaborations, you know, with I'm working with some folks from Moody College of Communication on a proposal for a presentation together that I just got because they're just kind of randomly like said, hey, I want to know what you do. You know, I want to know more about you. And so that's good. That's a good way to sort of bridge gaps without, you know, and like let that guard come down a little bit. So, you know, looking ahead, you know, what excites you most about, you know, kind of the future of marketing and recruitment and, you know, where do you see some opportunities for the growth and innovation for Rutgers and other schools?
You know, I think one thing that is really valuable for not just Marcom folks, IT, student services, advancement, whoever, is just continuing to have genuine interest and connections with folks outside of their institution, both at other colleges and universities, as well as on agency sides, as well as on just folks who are just in higher ed, like yourself. Like being able to have those connections to learn from each other, that is a very, really, really valuable experience that helps make us better back in our own institutions by bringing in different experiences for in different situations that different schools are in. So I'm really excited to continue to see the higher ed community on LinkedIn and High Ed Web, of course, and in other areas continue to learn from each other. In addition to that, just the industry as a whole, certainly AI is a hot topic right now. And I do think it's important to at least follow it. Certainly, I think it's valuable to just for us to keep in mind, don't lose sight of the student experience. Like you want to always have an understanding of what problem we're actually trying to solve, regardless of whether it's the hot new thing or not. Yeah. But I do think it's valuable to at least be paying attention to where AI is going, how it's being utilized in higher ed marketing specifically for things like that. So it should be an interesting year in that regard. Then I would say the third and final category is just if we think even broader than that, outside of higher ed and just thinking about higher ed's place in society, given conversations around the value of a degree, the value of higher education being under attack in certain instances, I think we have to continue to be mindful of how we tell stories about how higher education is transformative in the lives of all sorts of different people in and around the United States and beyond. Just starting from where we are in our own backyard, how is Rutgers Business School supporting the Newark, New Jersey community, for example, or New Brunswick, or just Northern New Jersey, or New Jersey as a whole? Just talking about how we're supporting our community, we're supporting students and helping change their lives, both domestically and international students. I do think that is going to be a very interesting, potentially challenging conversation over the next many, many years. So I'm curious to see how it goes, but trying to be optimistic about how we can influence positively the narrative around that topic.
Yeah. Awesome. I love it. This has been an awesome conversation. Thanks so much for joining us. Where can people connect with you at? If you want to, you know, let us know where we can connect with High Ed Web at.
Sure. So anyone should be able to easily find me on LinkedIn. Just search Joshua Charles. And I think for High Ed Web, easiest place, highedweb.org. Of course, we have our own Slack and as well as the High Ed Web annual conference in September in Albuquerque this particular year, as well as many other events throughout the year. So again, linkedin.com/Joshua Charles for myself, and then highedweb.org for High Ed Web.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Josh. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening. Three things I want to give you before you go. Number one, reminder to sign up for my free weekly newsletter all about creating content that resonates emotionally with your audience. And you can do that at unveiled.tv/newsletter. Unveiled is spelled UNVEILD. Number two, if you've enjoyed this episode, share it with someone. Share it with your team, your boss, your dog, whatever. And if you're not already subscribed, I'd love for you to do that. Number three, reach out to me. If you have comments, questions, you want to talk about a video project, whatever, my email is john@unveiled.tv. John is spelled J-O-H-N. Or follow me on LinkedIn. If you're searching for me, my last name is spelled A-Z-O-N-I. That's all for today, and I look forward to catching you on the next episode of the Higher Ed Storytelling University podcast. Thanks.